documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours, along with Vicki Davis. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. And today is the 25th of March, 2017, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. Running around here at the last minute, had some business to take care of this morning, and so I was gone early this morning and just literally walked into the studio. I knew I was going to be pushed for time, so I had everything powered up ahead of time, but a little out of breath, and I realized, it's a little bit later than I thought it was. But anyway, we're here, and we're on the air, and I think we have Vicki Davis here with us. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning, Darren. Yeah, I was afraid you overslept or something.
No, I haven't overslept in years, thankfully. I do have to get the call bridge up, though. what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, not too much. I've been really interested in this whole idea of Russia and hybrid warfare. What they're calling, they're calling Trump and all kinds of people, lots of people, Alex Jones, Steve Bannon, they're calling them all Russian operatives and engaged in Russian hybrid warfare. And as I've been looking at this, this isn't really Russia, a Russian way of war. This is the new American way of war. And right. So it's kind of fascinating, seeing how they're turning the tables and making it appear as if Russia is the aggressor in this new hybrid warfare, when in fact it's actually the United States, or maybe both of them, maybe both the U.S. and Russia, because this is a global, a new way of war at the global level, I think.
Yeah. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, sorry, I was a little bit distracted. I just got the bridge up. So, this is a concerning thing to me, because what I see going on right now is I see a number of different alternate news sites, truth media, radio, outlets that are being fingered for hobnobbing with the enemy. They are being this is becoming more and more of a dangerous time, and we've seen this coming. I thought there would be somewhat of a reprieve, I guess you'd say, when the Republicans took office, but this thing is continuing to go. It's clear to me now, very clear, and I think it's becoming very clear to everybody, that the deep state shadow government is who's really in control. Now, we've known this for many, many years in the truth media. But now it's like they don't care about pretending anymore. It's like they've taken off the mask and they're showing this beast for what it really is. They're demonstrating that they don't care that you don't control your government. They don't care that the people seem to know, that the people are learning who's really in control, and that the leaders, the political leaders that we elect, the people that we go to the polling stations to choose who's going to run the country on our behalf, they're not really the ones in control. It's very obvious for anybody who has a pulse and is semi-paying attention, and that should be alarming to everybody. This fingering of alternative media sites and alternative media sources, truth media, as somehow colluding with the enemy, that is a very dangerous direction that I see things going.
Right, and the absurd part of it is that they're pointing all fingers at Russia, completely ignoring what's going on with China, because they're going to be inviting communist Chinese money in as foreign direct investment to help build our critical infrastructure.
Right.
And I think when you dig down to the very bottom of who is behind all of this, you find the tech industry. It's the tech industry and the connecting of the world, you know, through fiber optic cable, and our government actually connecting systems with foreign entities. That's who I consider to be at the core of the deep state, driving the whole agenda.
Yeah, that's certainly how they're getting the job done. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and dive right into this. The FBI. Now, I don't know if you've been following it at all or if you were aware. Judge Andrew Napolitano was suspended from Fox News this week for reporting that they had three intelligence sources that told them that Obama used the British intelligence agencies to spy on Trump. You know, if I see witch hunts and wiretaps, and everywhere you go, this seems to be the meme in the news now: witch hunts and wiretaps. Of course, they're not calling it a witch hunt, but it's very obvious that that's what it is. Anyway, this is what Judge Napolitano said, and he's been villainized now for it, but I think he's telling the truth.
The statutes authorize the President of the United States to order the surveillance of any person in the United States of America without suspicion, without probable cause, and without a warrant, meaning he doesn't have to go to a court to do it. So he can order the NSA, which already has the digital version of our phone calls, to transcribe the digital version into a transcript and give it to him. But if he does that, there's a record of the order.
Right.
So three intelligence sources have informed Fox News that President Obama went outside the chain of command. He didn't use the NSA, he didn't use the CIA, he didn't use the FBI, and he didn't use the Department of Justice. He used GCHQ. What the heck is GCHQ? That's the initials for the British spying agency. They have 24/7 access to the NSA database. So by simply having two people go to them saying, President Obama needs transcripts of conversations involving candidate Trump, conversations involving President-elect Trump, he's able to get it. And there's no American fingerprints on this.
So you're saying that the British use their version of the CIA to wiretap Donald Trump's phone or
ours? It's not a wiretap. The concept of plugging a wire into a phone box in the basement of a building is what the law was when these statutes were written in 1978. Everything is done electronically now via computer. The NSA has 24/7, 365 access to every mainframe computer of every telecom and every computer service provider that does business in the United States. And they share that with various intelligence agencies, including the Brits. So the British intelligence agency had this. What happened to the guy who ordered this? Resigned.
Incredible.
3 days after Donald Trump was inaugurated.
So
yeah,
that was exactly what got him fired.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was talking about with our government linking up information systems with foreign entities. I watched a C-SPAN program where there were five intelligence officials, you know, from five countries. There was John Brennan, I think his name is, of the American intelligence guy.
Former CIA
There was
director.
A guy from the UK, a guy from France, and another country. And they were there talking about their cooperation with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the sharing of intelligence. So there you go. And that's what Parag Khanna was talking about Do you know who Parag Khanna is?
Oh yeah, we played audio from him before on the show. He's a major player.
Okay, with his new book called Connectography,
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what he's talking about. Is the reconnections of governing authority, if you will, along horizontal lines rather than hierarchical. And he's quite right. It will collapse our government. It will collapse all of the governments. It is a reorganization of power.
Yeah, Parag Khanna is the guy who is talking about maps all the time and how the new maps should be drawn without borders.
Exactly.
Yeah, because everything that is being done now is being done to erode borders, erode the importance of borders, to make borders unnecessary, the internet being one major factor. I really think ham radio, that's, you know, nothing they ever do, they ever give us, no technology is ever given to the people without some kind of ulterior motive for control. And ham radio was supposed to, one of the purposes for the FCC to license ham operators originally was to increase international goodwill, is how they put it, which sounds real good. But I think really what it's designed to do is get people acquainted with each other across borders, and it kind of helps soften the need for borders or the desire for borders, because, hey, if we like each other, these little nasty borders that are separating everybody, why even have them? And so I really think that that's one of the purposes of ham radio, really. Originally.
Yeah.
And the internet really took the place of ham radio.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because that's what the Helsinki Final Act that was signed in 1975 by Gerald Ford, you know, after they took out Nixon, they signed the Helsinki Final Act, and the whole purpose of that agreement was exchanges with the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of soften the hard lines between our countries, and, you know, kind of get acquainted kinds of things. And some of the exchanges included journalists and educators at the universities. So if you wonder why our universities are so messed up, I think it's because of the imported communist university professors.
Yeah, I don't doubt that one bit. There's certainly no shortage of communist professors. As a matter of fact, I got some stuff in that vein. If you're interested, we can jump back into this witch hunt here in just a moment. But a little cultural Marxist news. CBS News has had a live streaming site, and I didn't even know they had this. They're pushing for pushing the agenda of cultural Marxism by explaining the brand new, hot, trendy gender definitions. Get a load of this. New gender definitions, and they're defining all this for you.
We learned Friday the Supreme Court will consider what could be a landmark case for transgender rights.
Today, Bruce Jenner went public with a new female identity and name. Jenner will now be known as Caitlyn.
Are you saying that you're going to start dressing up like a lady all the time?
I mean, all my life. My whole life I've been dressing up like a man.
For starters, you might think that the only types of transgender individuals are those who go from male to female and those who go from female to male. On the contrary,
think of male and female as two binary ends of a spectrum. While many transgender people do transition from one end of this spectrum to the other, there are many others who identify as non-binary, meaning somewhere in the space between, and in some cases, outside of the spectrum altogether. As with any spectrum, there are countless options along the gender non-binary. There's agender, which is the absence of gender completely. These are people who feel they are neither male nor female. There are gender fluid and gender queer, terms for people who embrace a fluidity of gender identity, incorporating elements of both femininity and masculinity into their daily lives. In some cases, gender queer people embrace a fluidity of sexual orientation as well.
And people like me, who identify with the gender we were given at birth, are known as cisgender, or cis. It's a lot of terminology to take in, but as you'll see in the following documentary, it's key to better understanding the stories we present.
Now, do you feel enlightened there, Viggy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel totally modern and culturally screwed up.
You're nice hip. You're really hip. I got more of these, but I don't think I'm going to play.
Yeah, you know what? And that actually ties into the definition of Russian hybrid warfare. Mm-hmm. What they're calling Russian hybrid warfare, but in fact, it is Western. What they did, and I have a clip of Senator Ben Cardin talking about this, they included human rights in the trade agreements. And after that, what I found is that USAID was actually contracting with the LGBT community to go agitate in Brunei.
Hmm.
And bring all this cultural Marxism to Brunei. And since it's embedded in the trade agreements, it kind of puts the government of Brunei in a box. Right?
Yeah.
Because they want the economic benefits of the trade agreement, but then they have to put, of LGBT agitators.
Yeah, where they did their homework is framing this thing as a civil right. That's the thing that really is trying to change it. They're able to frame it as a civil right, and then all of a sudden, now it's a protected status. And
they've done it here, you know, those pink ladies, whatever, I forget what they're called.
You talking about the one that wore the pink hats?
Well, those and the ones that were at Congress, at the Capitol.
Right.
They've been here in Idaho, and they just they are blatantly socially and culturally obnoxious and offensive. And eventually, of course, you know, regular people begin to stand up, and then you get the conflict and the civil war, you know, because people try to salvage their culture, what's decent about their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what leads to these color revolutions.
Yeah. I did manage to get a good drop out of that clip, though.
My whole life I've been dressing up like a man.
I figured that would be a nice little thing to drop in once in a while. whenever the subject comes up. Anyway, moving along here, I wanted to get back to this. We were talking a moment ago about the witches and wiretaps. You know, we had this House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian election interference. Before we dive into the hearing, I think it's important to revisit the words of James Clapper. Now, he was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, and he stated very emphatically that there was no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion.
Does intelligence exist that can definitively answer the following question: whether there were improper contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials?
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
I understand that, but does it exist?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, so this seems to be the facts that from the James Clapper, which I don't give a whole lot of weight to James Clapper because he lied before Congress about the NSA spying. But this is something, supposedly this guy is ahead of he was the Director of National Intelligence, and he's saying there's no evidence for Trump-Russia collusion. That seems to be the fact, though, that it's lost amongst all the propaganda these days. With that as background, though, we go to Adam Schiff's opening statement at this hearing this past week.
We'll go ahead and give him 15 minutes for his opening statement. Mr. Schiff.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you. And I also want to thank Director Comey and Admiral Rogers for appearing before us today as the committee holds its first open hearing into the interference campaign waged against our 2016 presidential election. Last summer, at the height of a bitterly contested and hugely consequential presidential campaign, a foreign adversarial power intervened in an effort to weaken our democracy and to influence the outcome for one candidate and against the other.
Okay, first of all, let's just pause it right there and remind the listeners there's absolutely no evidence of any of this. They haven't produced one iota of evidence backing anything this guy's saying here. We've talked about this time and time again on the program. IP addresses can be spoofed. People that are hacking into stuff, they use proxies. Russian proxies, I mean, even if it were Russian hackers, there's no evidence it's the Kremlin. So this is all nonsense what they're saying, but this is a case of repeating a lie often enough, and then it becomes generally accepted as fact. People keep yelling and screaming about the collusion between the Trump and Russian, between the Trump administration or individuals inside of the Trump administration. The only crime that we know about so far, and this is the point here that people need to keep in mind, there is a crime here, but the crime that we need to keep in mind, the only one that we really know about, is the unmasking of the leaks that are coming out of this administration. This is a crime. This is a felony. This is something for which people can be prosecuted. This is the only thing that we really know is really a crime that's going on. And nobody seems to be talking too much about prosecuting these people.
Well, you know what? And the interesting thing is that the accusation itself, with no evidence, is a part of the strategy of this hybrid kind of war that I'm not going to call a Russian strategy of war, because I think it is an American strategy of war, a Western strategy of war, of the new way of war at the global level. And making accusations for which there is no evidence is a big part of it, and using the media to propagate those accusations is also a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and that's what they've done in many countries around the world. They assert human rights violations.
Yeah.
And, all kinds of different violations. And they have their agitators in there, supplied by USAID, and eventually it does lead to a conflict situation where you then have military forces go in, or special forces.
There's no question. This is definitely a psychological warfare operation committed on the people for the purpose, I believe, of ultimately having a hot war. Obviously, the first casualty of war is the truth. And we are seeing that everywhere as the propaganda machine ramps up. Anytime they want to go to war with somebody, the first thing they do is villainize the enemy. And we're seeing this over and over and over again.
That foreign adversary was, of course, Russia. And it acted through its intelligence agencies and upon the direct instructions of its autocratic ruler, Vladimir Putin, in order to help Donald J. Trump become the 45th president of the United States. The Russian active measures campaign may have begun as early as 2015, when Russian intelligence services launched a series of spear phishing attacks designed to penetrate the computers of a broad array of Washington-based Democratic and Republican Party organizations, think tanks, and other entities. This continued at least through the winter of 2016. While at first the hacking may have been intended solely for the collection of foreign intelligence, in mid-2016 the Russians weaponized the stolen data and used platforms established by the intel services such as DC Leaks and existing third-party channels like WikiLeaks to dump the documents. The stolen documents were almost uniformly damaging to the candidate Putin despised, Hillary Clinton. And by forcing her campaign to constantly respond to the daily drip of disclosures, the releases greatly benefited Donald Trump's campaign. None of these facts is seriously in question, and they are reflected in the consensus conclusion of our intelligence agencies. We will never know whether the Russian intervention was determinative in such a close election. Indeed, it is unknowable in a campaign in which so many small changes could have dictated a different result. More importantly, and for the purposes of our investigation, it simply does not matter. What does matter is this. The Russians successfully meddled in our democracy, and our intelligence agencies have concluded they will do so again.
Okay, all conspiracy theory. By the way, this guy doesn't even know what form of government we have. Once again, not a democracy. It is a representative republic, at least if it were operating in accordance with the Constitution. And that's a different story, but I have to point that out. The point is, though, is all of this is conjecture. All of this is conspiracy theory. And there's no proof of any of this. But he just states
right,
they just openly.
They just keep...
What'd you say?
I said they just keep saying it as if it's true.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
None of it's true.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're just about up to the break already. Blew through the first half hour. We're going to take the break and hit the ground running when we come back. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. Phone lines are wide open, 844-646-8376. We have a lot of information for you, but we want to hear from you as well. Toll free, 844-646-8376 or 844-6-GOVERN. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here, as we are every Saturday. It continues to be the 25th of March, 2017, and the website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. Chat room's open at chat.governamerica.com if you want to join us. A few people in there already. chat.governamerica.com, and Vicki's website is thetechnocredictyranny.com. And the phone number, if you'd like to call in and join the broadcast here today, is 844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 844-646-8376. And we have a call right now from West Virginia. Hello. Come on in.
Yeah, this is Kent from West Virginia. Did you ever think that there's a possibility of a third party, you know, like a false flag? Do you ever think that possibly Israel did this? They have the technical capability to do all this cyber trickery. And do you ever think that they did this to... install Trump and his son-in-law Kushner, and that they they pointed the blame towards Russia. Now, if you listen to Comey,
I would say, let me answer your question. I would say that's a very likely scenario. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So, and if you remember when Comey testified, he used the word loud or noisy, and he said that several times, like. In other words, it was almost like they wanted to be caught. So they wanted this direction to go towards Russia. And so, of course, you know, in the United States, if the intelligence community is faced with this situation and they know what has happened, and I suppose they know Israel did it. Now, politically, can they attack Israel? I mean, can they accuse Israel? You know, that's just not possible. I mean, they're just going to be accused of anti-Semitism and everything. So it may be just they may just have to use Russia as a false weapon against him and pound on Russia just for the sake of accomplishing the task of neutralizing this encroachment on our democracy, our republic, whatever you want to call it, by not Russia but Israel, and by creating this false flag of Russia. In other words, if this false entity of Russia has been created to create this problem, mm-hmm. they have to fight against that false entity. They can't name Israel. I mean, come on, let's face it. I mean, you and I can talk about it, but the CIA, the FBI...
Well, they never will. They never will. I mean, Israel's a little secret.
They never will, and so if they know that, and if they know that... Okay, we have to blame somebody in order to accomplish the task, you know, which is to...
Well, but you know what? They will never accomplish the task that way. Because if you're fighting... By mentioning Russia and making it a Russian strategy, you're just shadow boxing. You're just fighting with a shadow. Everybody should remember, you remember Amdocs and how the CIA, I think it was, contracted with the Israelis for their phone system. And that was a report by Brian Williams, I think, on Fox News. There was Amdocs and another Israeli company.
I think Brian Williams is on NBC.
Spying in and on the United States. And so I think you're right, you know, about it being Israel. But I do think it is a... conspiracy, if you will, of the intelligence agencies themselves. Because when I talked about horizontal reorganization, that's what I mean, is intelligence agency from one country hooking up and working with an intelligence agency of another country and, you know, continuing on until you have all the intelligence agencies in the world linked up, synchronized, and working on the same strategies against their own countries and the other countries. So you end up with, I don't know, would you call that a fifth column? I don't know.
Well, I think the situation is, I agree with you there, and that is one reality. We saw that with 9/11 where, you know, but now I personally believe and that there, it's not... it's not all-encompassing. I mean, it's just like either there's forces for good in the intelligence agency, and they will act against it. It's just like a police force. You can have a police force where there's some of them are working with the mafia or the drug smugglers or something, working right alongside the, you know, the good cops that are supposed to be fighting this, you know. So it could be quite similar in the intelligence agencies. And like, I agree with you 100% that, you know, there's linkages there, but there's forces in the intelligence services for good, for, you know, protecting the country. And so maybe Comey's one of them, and maybe they are, it's an internal struggle that they're undertaking. And
I think, my opinion of Comey, I think he's very political. And I've got some evidence right here that strongly suggests, I don't think he, I'm conflicted, because it looks to me like, from this hearing and for everything that's going on, and I'll get it more deeper into this hearing, and you'll see what I'm talking about, but I think this, for whatever reason, they didn't want Hillary Clinton in there. And maybe they thought that they couldn't control her as well as they could Trump, for some reason. But that's the conclusion I'm coming to now, is the intelligence community didn't want Hillary. Before, I just thought it was the NSA didn't like Hillary. But arguably, Comey did more to keep her out of office than anybody else. I mean, announcing that investigation just prior to the election, I don't think anybody can argue that that looked like if he was in favor of Hillary, he would have kept that mum. Now we know that there was an investigation opening against Donald Trump, supposedly with this Russian connection back in July. And Comey kept it under wraps. So it begs the question, what's going on here? And
well, you know what? That's a very interesting thought, Darren. And I could agree with you on that. Because what would have happened if Hillary had gotten elected as president? She was the leader of this whole leftist, abnormal community agenda thing, you know, the whole LGBT community and the leftist progressive, I guess, I don't know what you would call it. I call it cultural cannibalization. But she was really the head of all of that. And I don't think it would have been very long before we actually devolved into civil war.
Well, even more than that, I don't know how much the FBI or the intelligentsia would really care about the LGBT, you know, Q, you know, M-O-U-S-E, you know.
Oh, they wouldn't. They wouldn't at all, but we certainly would.
Well, we certainly would, but here's the thing. What I think they care about, I think they care about the fact that the Clintons are on the take. The Clintons, the only thing the Clintons are about are the Clintons. They don't have any loyalty to anybody. I mean, you give them enough money, they'll do anything for you. And that's why I kind of joked to one of my colleagues. I said, well, you know, I mean, we were worried about the Clintons coming in and taking away our firearms. I guess if we just give them enough money, they won't do that. You know, because, I mean, they've literally demonstrated that they'll go back on their principles. They've went against environmental, you know, edicts, environmental opinions that they've had in the past, completely reversed them if enough corporations give them enough money. So, I mean, they're pretty much on the take. I mean, anything, they'll do anything, anyone's bidding if they get enough money from it. And so I think that that's who controls the Clintons. And the CIA and all these intelligence agencies, they want to be able to have the ability to be in control. So it comes down to who they can control if they got somebody in office.
Yeah, that's a good point, Darren.
I'm thinking they wanted Trump. Because they, for whatever reason, maybe he's got more skeletons in his closet than even we're aware of. But he's probably controllable. Go ahead, Kent.
Well, maybe it's easier to control somebody who works from an ideological point of view. I don't know. Because you know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You can predict their actions.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Kent?
If you remember, Darren, if you remember back to before the election, you remember that I predicted that Trump was going to win. And I even suggested to you that Comey, by doing that, my belief is that they knew that Trump was being aided by Israel via WikiLeaks, and that so I thought that they had Comey come out. See, Comey actually came out and took a lot of heat because he didn't prosecute Clinton. So he actually came out and released this, you know, made this statement, which, if you remember what at the time, I said that set the stage for a Hatch Act challenge to the election. So I thought prior to the election, which I think they knew Trump was going to win because of the WikiLeaks, which was aided by Israel. So he did that as setting the stage for a challenge to the election between the election and the Electoral College vote, which, you know, there was a lot of talk about, but they never pushed it. And I think they decided that the better approach was to let him take office and then try to contain him, you know, using this Russia charge against him.
Yeah, and that's exactly so what I believe that now that he's in there, they're using this and maybe other things in cooperation with it. That so-called dossier, which was total nonsense and completely unsubstantiated, could have been a warning for something that really is in his closet that he doesn't want to have brought out. We don't know. Yeah. We really don't have any way of knowing until or unless something is brought out that's damning in that regard. But this we know this is how the shadow government operates. We know that our elected officials don't really set their own policy. And I think now we're seeing the mask taken off and this thing being demonstrated right before our eyes.
But you have to, if you accept the premise that Trump was aided by a foreign country and not Russia but Israel creating the false flag of Russia, if you accept that, then you have to view Trump as a tool of a foreign country, and therefore, if the American intelligence agencies are trying to solve this problem, you have to see them as a force for good, no matter how they do it. In other words, if it's the deep state, whatever it is, but if it is trying to contain this problem, which was created through our electoral system, a process which is flawed by a foreign country, then, you know, that's the way I look at it. You know, I think that's what we're seeing, and we just have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out. Well, thanks, Kent, for the call. I appreciate it. Always enjoy your input. All right. Thank you very much. All right, folks,
that's interesting things to think about. That was a good call.
Yeah, I don't know. My opinion about the intelligence agencies, I think that there are some people inside the intelligence agencies that are there for the right reason, and they're trying to keep the country safe. I think the leadership in just about any organization tends to be corrupt. And therefore, that corruption, you know, the fish rots from the head. And so, because, and in particular, the secrecy and the lack of transparency in many places, in many times, Congress doesn't know what these people are doing. Their budgets are all classified. This makes the whole thing open, I mean, completely ripe for corruption. And so, while I think there's probably some good people inside these organizations, and maybe many good people, and by good I mean they're there for the right reasons, they have good intent. They're not out to do our country harm or the people harm. There's still plenty of diabolical, impish, hellish people involved in there as well. And this is
the
problem.
And it all depends on how you define safe. If their idea of being safe is to have a global governing system, I'd rather die on my feet fighting it than have my grandchildren live on their knees as slaves to it.
Right, exactly. I agree with you.
So, you know, that kind of safety I'm not interested in.
Yeah, me either. Let's go out to Kansas. Got another call on the line. Folks, you can call in as well. 844-646-8376. That's the toll-free number. 1-844-646-8376. And hello, Kansas. You're on the air.
Hi, Darren. This is Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Don't y'all think that the Congress has gotten themselves into a situation that they can't really vote themselves out of because they've allowed the NSA to do what they to spy on everybody, and now they've got so much on Congress that, you know, somebody comes forward, they're screwed.
Yeah, well, I think that's really the purpose of the whole thing. And I don't know that Congress, yeah, they kind of looked the other way as far as the oversight and stuff is concerned and let this whole thing go on. To what degree?
Actually, they keep adding to the power of the surveillance state, home scam security, and so Congress speaks out of both sides of their mouth. And I completely agree about our members of Congress being compromised. And if you think back over the last decade and a half, how many members of Congress have been taken out because something was exposed that they had been doing for a long time that nobody ever reported on? And I give as an example Senator Larry Craig of Idaho. Apparently, you know, he liked men. I don't know, but they exposed him as, you know, looking for male companionship at the Minnesota airport. Hmm. And of course, he ended up having to resign. The first one that I remember that happened to, but it was with women, was Senator Bob Packwood of Oregon.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I meant to find the date of when he was taken out. It seems to me like it was in the mid-1990s.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, you know, and the thing is, it's odd that Packwood, or somebody like that, would be just dogged by this. Don't get me wrong, I'm not defending anybody that would, you know, be a womanizer or anything like that. But look at Bill Clinton. He was in office all through the 90s, and it was just like, that's his personal life. We don't care. I you know, it's funny, the selective morality, you know, for certain people, it's the end of the world that they're doing these kinds of things. And for other people, if you're, it's just pick and choose, you know, the double standards are all over the place.
But I think there is the agenda behind it. I don't think it's just randomly we'll take this guy out and we'll let this guy stay.
Oh, yeah, no question.
I think it's because they are not cooperating at the point where they don't cooperate on the agenda. I think that's when they're taken out.
But you're talking about Congress. I think James Clapper should have been prosecuted for lying to Congress about the NSA spying. The dragnet here in... And most people will never see the ramifications of NSA spying. I believe that. But the databasing is going on. They're collecting dossiers on every one of us. Anybody that speaks out, they've got a dossier on them. And, you know, if you get to be too much trouble, anything that you have that you want hidden, it'll be brought out into the open somehow. And I think that's the whole purpose of it all.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
And I really do think there's something to this pedophile ring. And
yep.
Just like in the with Franklin cover-up stuff in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's going to get exposed, but, you know.
Yeah, and that's a tricky one to expose.
I don't know how we do it.
Yeah, because you have to have hard evidence. You can't go around accusing people of being pedophiles, or you're libeling. And that's the problem. So it's a tricky one, because that's something that can get people sued.
Well, and it ruins people, you know, if whether they're guilty or innocent, if somebody makes the accusation, you know, their reputation is sullied, and you can never undo that.
Yep.
Yeah, it happens to fathers all the time in divorce things, I understand. You know.
Yeah, I don't understand that kind of viciousness in women. They're doing that, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. How two people.
Well, that's all I had.
All right. Well,
good show, guys.
Hey, good hearing from you, Sherry.
Thank you.
God bless. Talk to you later. Bye. There he is. There she is, Sherry in Kansas. So 844-646-8376 if you'd like to call in. That's 844-6-GOVERN. Do you have any other thoughts there, Vicki, before we go on with the hearing?
No.
Okay,
go ahead.
Here's James Comey's opening statement.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining. At the request of congressional leaders, we have taken the extraordinary step, in coordination with the Department of Justice, of briefing this Congress's leaders, including the leaders of this committee, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation. With respect to the President's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
Okay, now later on, the chairman of the committee came out, and I have this audio in a moment, and he said that Trump was, in fact, under surveillance. We'll get to that in a moment. Go ahead.
Let me point something out, too. Mm-hmm. He said the FBI, but it's the Department of Home Scam Security that is the center of all the information systems and the coordination of systems and the collection of databases for domestic purposes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So just keeping it to the FBI really is kind of meaningless.
Yeah. I tell you what, we're just about up to the break already. It's hard to believe that the time's going by very quickly. Let's go ahead and take the break, and when we come back, we'll continue with the hearing, and we have other things on tap as well. And your phone calls are welcome, 844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 844-6-GOVERN. The website is governamerica.com, and Vicky's site is thetechnocratictyranny.com. And our number one is blown by. We're just getting started. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America, hour number 2. Vicki Davis is here, I'm Darren Weeks, and it continues to be the 25th of March, 2017, as we get right back into the show here. Sharing some audio here from a hearing that was held this past week on Russia. Russia influence in the election and our systems and influence on our politicians. Folks, it's just another witch hunt. It's a witch hunt that never ends here, and it's just absolutely ridiculous, but we have to address it because this is the kind of stuff that is going on behind the scenes. There is a war right now, and we've been talking about it for months here. A war going on, which is continuing to play out. And ultimately, where is this going to lead? If Trump doesn't cooperate with the intelligentsia, if he doesn't cooperate with the people that are working behind the scenes in the shadows, he'll be up for impeachment. I have every reason to believe one way or the other they will remove him. And impeachment would be one of the best-case scenarios, I think, because the alternatives are, well, not very appealing, and I'll just leave it at that. We've already seen.
I think that would cause a civil war.
We're doggone close to a civil war already, aren't we?
Yeah, it's just under the surface.
It is. It is. And the media is. I tell you what, if there's bloodshed in this country, and really there already arguably has been, the media are the ones who have the blood on their hands. because they have been fanning the flames of this fire for a long time.
They are very much a part of it. Let me read this thing to you. This is an article that was posted on the Army website, .mil website, and it's about, you know, the Russian hybrid warfare. And this article says, however, Russia believes that the pattern of forced U.S.-sponsored regime change has largely been supplanted by a new method. Instead of overt military invasion, the first volleys of U.S. attack come from the installment of a political opposition through state propaganda. In parentheses, they put CNN, BBC, etc., the internet and social media and non-governmental organizations. After successfully instilling political dissent, separatism, and or social strife, the legitimate government has increasing difficulty maintaining order. Hmm. As the security situation deteriorates, separatist movements can be stoked and strengthened, and undeclared special operations, conventional and private military forces can be introduced to battle the government cause further havoc.
Mm. And so, say again where that was from?
It's the usacac.army.mil website.
Wow.
And it's called Military Review of... Yeah, it's a military review. I'll give you the link to the...
Yeah, give me the link and let's put it in the show notes. Absolutely. Send it via email, though. By the way, the email address for me is radio@governamerica.com. And Vicky's is eyeswideoopen@channelingreality.com. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
All right. And while we're on the subject of psychological operations, real quick here... We opened the show, or at least you did, Vicky, talking about the propaganda warfare that's going on. I see in the Independent, FBI has uncovered, quote, evidence of treason, unquote, among alt-right websites, says George W. Bush's ethics lawyer. As if this guy is any good. But
he's a paragon of ethics, isn't he?
Anybody associated with Bush. Anyway, the man who served, they say, as former President George W. Bush's most senior ethics lawyer, has suggested that the FBI is, quote, uncovering evidence of treason, unquote, by far-right U.S. news websites over their links with Russia. Richard Painter tweeted a link to an article suggesting that the Bureau was looking into news outlets like Breitbart News, InfoWars, and the Kremlin-backed RT News and Sputnik News to see whether they worked with Russian-backed operatives to disseminate stories favoring Donald Trump during the presidential election, at times when his campaign appeared to be struggling. Now, folks, we're getting into a very dangerous area. Again, when you start going into a witch hunt, talking about, oh, who's colluding with the Russians? Who's colluding with foreign interests? You're talking about regulating free speech. You're talking about going after enemies that are exposing information and trying to tie them to foreign powers so that you can eliminate them.
Right, but it's an echo chamber of lies. It's all lies. There are no connections. That's what gets me.
Well, what I wouldn't put it past them to do is to try to orchestrate or manufacture connections.
Well, that's true. They could do that. But the thing is that while all this echo chamber is going on about Russia, we've got communist China at the back door.
I know, and I've got, you know, the back door, the front door, the side door, tunneling right. Underground. They're everywhere.
Yeah, bringing money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. And I've got some more information. And this is the story. If Trump's going to be investigated for anything, it should be for the ties to the communist Chinese.
You bet, absolutely.
That, you know, and so I think a lot of this really is a smokescreen to me. To cover up the Chinese, the fact that they're literally carrying off the country.
Well, and one guy that I forget what his name is. I'll find the article. But one of his appointees owns a shipping company called the Diamond S. And that guy was supposed to divest all of his investments, but he did it all except for this one tanker shipping company. And the communist Chinese gave the guy the money to start this company. So it's really just a communist Chinese front company.
Yeah, this independent website out of the UK says investigators are now trying to establish whether the websites that they mentioned were complicit with the people managing the bots or the operatives were controlling them without their knowledge, which is entirely possible. Above the article on his Twitter post, Mr. Painter said, FBI uncovering evidence of treason. There is no other word for it. Currently a professor of corporate law at the University of Minnesota, he served as Mr. Bush's most senior ethics lawyer between 2005 and 2007. His comment came within days of the FBI Director James Comey's revelation that the Bureau was investigating Russia's alleged interference with the 2016 election and possible links between Moscow and Donald Trump's campaign team. Spokespeople for RT and InfoWars have all vehemently denied links to Russia. A Sputnik press office spokesperson said, Sputnik has nothing to do with bots and will take whatever legal action may be necessary to protect its reputation from defamation caused by anybody arguing to the contrary. Anyway, this is dangerous because, I saw the clip. I think you sent me the video, Alex Jones. You know, here's the thing, folks. I understand a lot of people, you know, talk Alex Jones down, and I don't, you know, love him, and I don't hate him. I mean, I literally am neutral on the subject. Alex Jones is Alex Jones, and I don't worry about Alex Jones. But to whatever extent, and I mean, people debate this, that, you know, I think nobody can argue that he's awakened a lot of people. Okay? And here's the thing. If he's sincere, if they're successful at taking him down, and this is what he said, and I agree with him on this, if they take him down, the rest of us are next. This is the way they're going to do it. They'll start with the ones that have the most notoriety. They'll start with the ones that have the biggest mouths, that have the biggest microphones, that have the biggest platforms, and they'll work their way down to the rest of us. And this is why we're in a very dangerous time right now, because we're talking about regulating free speech. We're talking about sites that have fake news, and how can we censor websites? How can we censor news sources? How can we do all of this stuff and shut these people up? This is the very definition of tyranny, folks. This is the very definition of tyranny. In a country where we have a First Amendment, we have freedom of the press, Congress shall make no law. Well, it restricts Congress. But what about the intelligentsia? What about all these movements? What about all these independent corporations? They don't have any constitutional restrictions. And Congress should be working to protect freedom of speech. But
you know what? That's the danger of the system that they have. That when they redesigned our government, basically they changed our form of government, and they gave the power of redesigning the systems of government to private corporations. And the thing is that government is. They can only do the things that are authorized in law. Mm-hmm. A corporation can do anything that is not prohibited by law. So when you have a partnership between government and corporations, they can do any damn thing they want.
Yep.
Because what one of them can't do, the other one can do.
Yeah, and they certainly are running roughshod over the rights of the people, and they're getting away with it.
Absolutely. Okay, I found the article. The name of the Trump appointee that owns the Communist Chinese front company is Wilbur Ross. He's the Secretary of Commerce. And the name of the shipping company is Diamond S Shipping.
Okay. All right, yeah, you'll pop that over to me in the so I can put it in the show notes, right?
You betcha.
All right, very good. All right, moving along here, we were talking about this this meeting here, this hearing this past week. Now, you know, here's the thing about it. It was a 5-hour and 10-minute meeting. 5 hours and 10 minutes of political grandstanding. Democrats asking loaded political questions, and Comey, at times I kept saying, why are they even having a hearing? Because he kept repeatedly saying he wasn't going to answer. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to, you know. Then about 4.5 hours, Vicky, into the hearing, there came the golden moment. Comey had admitted that he opened the investigation against Trump back in July, and that would be prior to the election. A freshman representative by the name of Elise Stefanik asks Comey why didn't he brief Congress on the investigation? Listen to this exchange.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Ms. Stefanik's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Comey and Admiral Rogers, for your testimony today. My first set of questions are directed at Director Comey. Broadly, when the FBI has any open counterintelligence investigation, what are the typical protocols or procedures for notifying the DNI, the White House, and senior congressional leadership?
There is a practice of a quarterly briefing on sensitive cases to the chair and ranking of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. And the reason I hesitate is, thanks to feedback we've gotten, we're trying to make it better. And that involves a briefing of the Department of Justice, I believe the DNI, and the some portion of the National Security Council at the White House.
So if that's so quarterly...
To brief them before Congress is briefed.
Okay, now this is very important. Because at the time Obama was in office, okay, and Obama would have been briefed, he was being kept up to speed on all of this, and somehow Congress was left out of the equation.
Quarterly for all three, then senior congressional leadership, the White House, and the DNI?
I think that's right. Now, that's by practice, not by rule or by written policy, which is why, thanks to the chair and ranking giving us feedback, we're trying to tweak it in certain ways.
So since in your opening statement you confirmed that there is a counterintelligence investigation currently open, and you also referenced that it started in July, when did you notify the DNI, the White House, or senior congressional leadership?
That's a good question. Congressional.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That's a good question. What am I going to say? I got to talk out of my hind end now.
Or senior congressional leadership.
That's a good question. Congressional leadership, sometime recently, they were briefed on the nature of the investigation in some detail, as I said. Obviously, the Department of Justice has been aware of it all along. The DNI, I don't know what the DNI's knowledge of it was, because we didn't have a DNI until Mr. Coates took office, and I briefed him his first morning in office.
Okay, that is a lie. That is an absolute lie. They most certainly did have a DNI director. His name was James Clapper. So Comey lied about that.
Wow.
Which makes you question why. What is he covering up here? He's obviously covering something up. All right.
Well, now, he said it was. He also the Department of Justice was aware. That means Loretta Lynch.
Yes. Yes, and we know she was orchestrating things behind the scenes. So,
right, because and remember the meeting that she had with Clinton on the tarmac.
Yep. So something's going on here, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but he's covering something up. She goes on, and it's unfortunate she didn't challenge him on that, because it's very obvious there was a director of national intelligence, but she goes on to press him on the timeline. Now, if you go and look at this video, he's looking very, very uncomfortable at this point.
I don't know what the DNI's knowledge of it was, because we didn't have a DNI until Mr. Coates took office and I briefed him his first morning in office.
So just to drill down on this, if the open investigation began in July and the briefing of congressional leadership only occurred recently, why was there no notification prior to the past month?
I think our decision was it was a matter of such sensitivity that we wouldn't include it in the quarterly briefings.
So when you state our decision, is that your decision? Is that usually your decision what gets briefed in those quarterly updates?
No, it's usually the decision of the head of our counterintelligence division.
And just, again, to get the detailed on the record, why was the decision made not to brief senior congressional leadership until recently, when the investigation had been open since July, a very serious investigation? Why was that decision made to wait months?
I think because of the sensitivity of the matter.
Okay, who would be the counterintelligence person? He said... When she asked him about the DNI, he said there wasn't one. We know that was Clapper. Mm-hmm. But who is the counterintelligence person?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, that's something to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's unfortunate. I don't know if you caught the lame response he had at the end there. You know, why did you decide to wait?
The sensitivity of the matter?
Because of the sensitivity of the matter. And you know, when his body language is everything. When he said that, he kind of shrugged, like, "Are you going to accept that?" he looked like a student turning in a substandard paper and hoping the teacher doesn't notice some of the things he did in it. I mean, he was caught, and it's unfortunate she's a freshman because she had him. She had him. Unfortunately, she moved on to something else. This is
stepping back more broadly. In the case of Russia, we know that cyber...
And then she moved on to something else. It's unfortunate she didn't say, all right, look, we know there was a director of national intelligence. We know, and I mean, she should have stayed on this point and drilled down on him more and say, I want to know why you didn't brief Congress. Because these people are supposed to be accountable to congressional oversight. And he's hiding something. It's clear he's hiding something.
Yeah, you know who will go after that is Trey Gowdy. Not much gets by that guy.
Yeah, but he didn't. He was hearing.
Yeah, no, maybe not this hearing because he already had his questions in line, but I'm just positive that he made a note.
I find it interesting that we find this out now, several months after the fact, that he, at the very time that we're hearing about Clinton's email server all the time, he had an open investigation on Trump as well, and he kept that under his hat. It remained very concealed. In fact, I remember, if you think back, he alluded to the fact that he had other investigations, and we just naturally assumed that those investigations were related to Hillary Clinton, and that at some point that would be paraded out as well, maybe after the election and after she had won. What we didn't know is that those investigations were on Trump. So that's why, really, the conclusion that somehow he helped or wanted to help Trump get in there is really kind of inescapable to me at this point. And now that Trump is in there, obviously he's playing his other games with his other investigation. But it's clear to me who's in charge here. Anyway, now to Democrat Denny Heck.
We've heard nothing but terribly disturbing evidence of what has happened to our country at the hands of arguably our greatest adversary. And what's worse, the evidence we've heard so far all seems to lead to the conclusion that they had help from the inside, that this was in part an inside job from U.S. persons, willing American accomplices, or terribly naive ones, or probably both, who helped the Russians attack our country and our democracy. We're both still at the early stages of our investigation. We're not indicting anyone. We're merely laying out some of the evidence and the facts, dirty though they be, sleazy though they be. And no matter what, we can say...
Okay, first of all, I have to say this. They're not facts. None of these are facts.
We conclude at this point that never
there is no evidence in the modern era.
Has a president...
Yeah, exactly. No evidence at all.
And his administration had so many foreign entanglements, entanglements that continued to push American foreign policy away from its core roots, beliefs, interests, and alliances towards unprecedented positions that only Putin himself could approve of.
I don't know if you had something you wanted to say about Heck, this Heck guy.
Heck's speech there was obviously well prepared, and it was almost like a movie speech, you know, where
with a script. You mean
a script? Yeah, of everything that he wanted to say, and he delivered it as if he was an actor, and the drama in it, I mean, you could hear the drama and everything, and it's just all nonsense. Mm-hmm. His whole entire speech is nonsense. They have no evidence. They have no proof. They have nothing.
Yeah.
They have an FBI director who led an investigation that makes... the Pentagon thing, I forget what it's called at the moment, Watergate, I guess it was, looked like child's play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just reached a level of absurdity that's really kind of destabilizing in itself. It makes me kind of dizzy, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to try to figure out what's going on with these people. And what their next steps are going to be. Here's Trey Gowdy.
Director Comey, Admiral Rogers, people in your line of work are incredibly respected, both your current line of work and the work that you came from. And people in my line of work are not. And there's a reason. The justice system is respected, and the political process is not. So this is, while this hearing's important, what's really important is what you do after this hearing. And I want you to go find every single witness who may have information about interference, influence, motive, our response, collusion, coordination, whatever your jurisdiction is, wherever the facts may take you, though the heavens may fall, go do your jobs.
Because the political aspect is not respected, but the FBI and the intelligence agencies are. What do you think of that, Vicki?
Yeah, that maybe at some point in the past, but in my recollection over the last 20, well, actually since Janet Reno was the Attorney General, I think that the Justice Department is no longer the respected agency, and that includes the people that were there during Bush W's administration.
Absolutely. Well, I think the whole federal government has become a kind of a laughing stock. I don't think anybody really holds any of them in high regard.
I think it's a criminal enterprise.
Absolutely, it is.
And I think that there are various factions of the criminal enterprise. They don't necessarily all operate together or in synchronization, but they all have their rice bowls, I guess you'd say, their areas where they can be corrupt. And as long as they don't cross boundaries with any other corruption going on anywhere else. They're all good to go.
Yeah.
For example, in these trials that are going on with the Bundys, you know, the one in Oregon and the one in Nevada, there is so much corruption, both in the process, in the evidence, in the FBI's actions, that it's really appalling. And if anybody were to take a look at that, any, you know, lawyers or whatever, and do a real analysis of it from a process point of view, a procedural point of view, they would be shocked at what is going on in our judicial system. It's not the American judicial system. It is it's a facade of corruption.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell you what, we're at the bottom of the hour already. Let's go ahead and take the bottom of the hour break, and we'll continue on the other side. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America. Please, don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. The website is governamerica.com. TheTechnocraticTyranny.com is Vicki's website. And the phone number, if you'd like to call in and join the show, is 844-646-8376. That's toll-free 844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 844-646-8376. As we continue on here, we've been sharing audio from a hearing held this past week on Capitol Hill, and I just about pretty much exhausted what I wanted to say about that hearing, unless you have something additional, Vicki. But I know after, you know, days, the chairman of that hearing, by the way, his name is Devin Nunes, and right after this hearing was held, he came out and he held a press conference, and he confirmed that there was indeed surveillance of Trump's team. Now, one of the things that has been so controversial, and we mentioned this last, you know, I think we first mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, and I mused last week that Trump was possibly trying to throw them off the trail, because you remember they were really pursuing his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, trying to connect him to the Russians, and so they pretty much pressured him, and he recused himself, which honestly I think was a mistake, but he did it nonetheless to try to appear, you know, impartial, so that they could go and be free to do their little witch hunt. And
You know what? Thought just occurred to me as you were saying that. Do you remember when Tom DeLay was the majority leader in Congress?
Yep.
Tom DeLay did get into trouble dealing with the Russians in a pay-for-play scheme. Maybe the thought just occurred to me that maybe this whole thing about the Russians is kind of a warning to Congress. Because a lot of the Republican members of Congress had dealings with the Russians during the Clinton administration, when they were, after the Soviet Union collapsed and the Soviet Union was broken up into independent states, and it was kind of like a feeding frenzy of piranhas over in Russia, gobbling up Russian natural resources.
Yeah, well, and you know what? I don't care if somebody does have connections with the Russians, as long as it's not against the interests of the United States. That's
ultimately, in this whole global scheme of things, it's against all the interests against all of the countries.
Yeah, well, and that's just the point. I mean, all this fixation on Russia, they're completely ignoring, you know, as Kent pointed out, the Israel connection. You know, nobody talks about that. The Chinese connection, nobody talks about that. What about the Saudis? What about, why don't we have congressional hearings about the influence of the Saudis? You know,
yeah.
I mean, all of this stuff is so ridiculous. And that's what they do. They zoom in on one little area, one little part. You know, the forest can be completely on fire, and they see, you know, oh, there's a little spark here in this area. Let's or at least we think there might be a spark here. So let's focus on this little spark so we can't see the fire. I mean, the fire is going to burn down the whole forest. But hey, no. We can't pay attention to that because we got this little thing that looks like it might be a spark. It could be a spark.
But the thing is that there's no evidence. So they're having this whole dog and pony show knowing that there is no evidence. So it could kind of serve as a asymmetric kind of threat,
mm-hmm.
in a way, because they know. Because if they were to turn it around and start looking at China, I mean, you know, that would just, you know, it'd be like a media nuclear explosion amongst the alternative media.
Well, let me show you exactly media. What they would do. Anybody that dares come out and talk about China, they'll do the same thing that they did to Devin Nunes. Devin Nunes, again, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, where the hearing took place that we were just playing audio from, he held a press conference and he confirmed that there was indeed surveillance of Trump's team and possibly Trump himself during the Obama administration. This is what he said.
First, I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Third, I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. And fourth and finally, I want to be clear, none of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team. The House Intelligence Committee will thoroughly investigate surveillance and its subsequent dissemination to determine a few things here that I want to read off. Who was aware of it? Why it was not disclosed to Congress? Who requested and authorized the additional unmasking? Whether anyone directed the intelligence community to focus on Trump associates, and whether any laws, regulations, or procedures were violated.
Now, as soon as he said that, of course, here come the attacks. How dare he legitimize Trump's tweets? How dare he claim that Trump was, you know, he's back in, this must be orchestrated by the White House.
They're running around the White House like they're creating this big spooky notion that somehow they have uncovered the whole thing.
Let's speak English here. He could not have injected more suspicion into his remarks. He wanted to be on television.
I'm dumbfounded here. What? I don't know what he's trying to prove. Why would he blow himself up, blow the committee up?
He just blew himself up yesterday because...
I have never seen a committee chairman come out in front of the press and just kind of pour gasoline all over himself and light himself on fire.
He's really tossed a bomb into the relationship with you. I can't believe for a moment they're happy at the FBI this morning.
He's obviously doing the bidding of a president who is a political day trader.
I think this was pure theater. I think in many respects it was probably orchestrated by the White House.
Are you even leaving over the possibility that this committee can conduct this investigation, or do you think the committee, because of the chairman's actions, in your view, has lost all credibility? It's done.
Has Chairman Nunes so damaged the credibility of the Intelligence Committee that they should just shut down that investigation?
And he has become the subject, basically, he should be, of an investigation.
He's just not at the caliber that Intel Committee chairmen are supposed to be at. And he's completely destroyed his reputation for
the chairman of the committee was a willing stooge. Chairman Nunes is deeply compromised, and he cannot possibly lead an honest investigation.
Do you think Devin Nunes should step down?
Are you ready at this point, Congressman, to say that the chairman, Chairman Nunes, should step down as committee chairman?
Yeah, and there you go.
Wow, Darren, that is huge. I have never heard so much.
Oh, venom.
Propaganda and lies compacted into such a brief period of time.
Yeah, it's venom, 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 venom. Yeah, it just goes to show you. How dare he? Well, he crossed the line. He's got to go, you know?
He's not smart enough to be there. I mean, for heaven's sakes, some of the chairmen we've had over time, talk about dumb people, you know? Yeah. But Nunes, he's a very intelligent guy. Well, so they're really reaching. They are really, really reaching.
Yeah,
and
now we see from Zero Hedge, FBI Director Comey unexpectedly shows up at the White House. Comey is making his rounds to the White House. As Reuters' Steve Holland reports, the reason Comey at the White House is for a routine interagency meeting, supposedly. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But something
right after
else
the hearing.
Happened. Yeah, something else happened last week that is very disturbing. The Defense Secretary, General James Mattis, he wants to nominate a senior fellow at a Soros-funded think tank as the Undersecretary of the Pentagon. Okay, this guy's name is Rudy DeLeon. And he's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress.
Mm.
Can you believe that? Cap, I mean, they are so far left. And they have been, I think, at the center of the left side of the technocratic agenda.
Yeah, it's...
And, Mattis wants to bring this guy as the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness.
You know, it's very odd. The people that Trump has put in there. I look at it as proof that he's not really making his own decisions. You know, there are people
around here
that are telling him what to do, and for whatever reason, he's going along with it. Maybe he has no choice. Whatever they got on him. Whatever they're holding, you know, in many respects, he's a willing stooge. You know, we were talking about disturbing things, and earlier we were talking about the communist Chinese, and this being the squirrel running across the yard, all this Russian stuff that is serving as the distraction for more important and greater threats. I'm not suggesting that, you know, Putin and the Russians are necessarily a cute, cuddly kitten. But are they the greatest threat that we face? I don't think so. You know, and here
I definitely agree with you.
You know, earlier I said something about the relationship that Trump has, or the Trump administration and the people around him, the people in his family, that they have with the communist Chinese. And if anything needs to be investigated, it's that. Here we see from Bloomberg, and to the person that called my attention to this, thank you. Kushner's, now you know the Kushner's, Jared Kushner is married to Ivanka, which is Trump's daughter. The Kushner's may get $400 million from Chinese on tower. Now, there is a, Ivanka's husband, once again, Jared Kushner, he's embarking on a $400 million deal. At least that's it's actually a much bigger deal than that. But the Kushner's, you know, Ivanka and Jared, they stand to gain, personally, $400 million from this Chinese company. It's an insurance company named Anbang Insurance for the tower building of the Kushners located at, you're going to love this, 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The communist Chinese...
I know that building. It has 666 on it.
Yeah. Well, that's the address.
In big, big letters.
You can't make this stuff up. So, anyway, here's a report.
Well, developing $4 billion deal between China's Anbang Insurance and New York-based Kushner Companies. We've got to tell you about this. A company linked to Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner stands to gain hundreds of millions of dollars from this deal. Ramy Nocencio has the latest on the deal between the two.
Yeah, an amazing huge deal here. $400 million, basically a tenth of what the whole entire transaction is valued at, would be going to Kushner Companies here. Now, realty lawyers are looking at this and saying that it's unusually favorable towards the Kushners here. And also we have to look at the idea that Anbang, one of the biggest Chinese life insurers, are actually would be in business partnership with the in-laws of the first family. So let's go through the details here. First up, I mentioned that $400 million, that's going to be a cash payout if this deal goes through from Anbang Insurance. The mortgage on that Kushner Company tower, 41 stories right near Bloomberg Tower here, would be cut to 80%. Not only that, Kushner Companies would then get the opportunity for a 20% stake in the tower's real retail space, which is much more lucrative than the office space here. Now, the deal isn't finalized, but they are shopping around for investors. One New York Realty lawyer says that this is a home run of a transaction. But with all that said, is there a conflict of interest? A lot of people are, of course, asking that, Betty. It's unclear whether the U.S. or China is going to do a review, but you can expect that there's a lot of defense going on everywhere. For example, Kushner Companies, in a statement, said that they're taking significant steps to avoid potential conflicts. The White House also came out saying that Kushner will recuse himself from any matter with his impartiality there. And also Anbang itself saying that it itself is a highly transparent company that operates in accordance to the standards of public companies. But again, interesting optics to have one of China's biggest insurers here in business partnership with the in-laws of the first family here.
And almost nobody is talking about this.
You know what? That's the way that the global system seems to operate. It's a system of triangulation so that you can't make a direct connection between the money provided for influence buying and a business deal that sells something, that gives something to a foreign country. And that was the kind of deal that was going on in Kazakhstan, where the leader of Kazakhstan was giving a sweetheart deal to a company, I think it was an American company, I can't quite remember, I think it was called Itera, but they give a sweetheart deal on some natural resources or some business opportunity to a relative or a friend or something. And do you remember Harry Reid's deal with the communist Chinese?
I sure do.
Right. And Harry Reid's
son. And his son was involved. Yeah, go ahead.
In an oil deal over in Asia somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been Kazakhstan. I can't remember. Tajikistan or somewhere. But that's the way. It's kind of a triangulation kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who started that? Carol Browner. During the Clinton administration, I called it regulatory racketeering, but she told Disney that they could develop land in Florida if they bought this, if they donated this one particular piece of land for conservation, this other piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you, that was extortion, is what it was. But if you extend that out to where you can get corporations to do things unrelated to the particular transaction that they're involved in, then basically you have set up a racket whereby you can use the money and the power of a corporation for things that are unrelated to the corporation, to their business.
Yeah. And there's nobody to rein these people in.
No, there isn't. And nobody.
Because all the people who are involved in it are the ones supposed to be doing the oversight.
Exactly. That's exactly. It's kind of like a whole mafia family kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, where you have our legislators and their family members are the ones that are getting the payoffs.
Yep. And here we see from SaukValley.com, the Chinese trade delegation visits region. General Consul remembers ties with small Iowa City. Hong Lai, China's consul general in Chicago, I didn't even know they had a consul general in Chicago. But it doesn't surprise me. He came to the Sauk Valley on Tuesday to talk about trade and investment opportunities, but shifting the conversation to friendships put a big smile on his face. The consul general had accepted an invitation to explore those opportunities from Whiteside County Economic Development Director Gary Camarino. He and a few of members of the Chicago delegation met with business and government leaders at a forum hosted by Sauk Valley Community College and then toured Aztec Mobile Screens in Sterling. The visit wasn't Hong's first trip through this part of the Midwest. He fondly remembers the legendary trips to other places, including Iowa, Muscatine, I guess, would they be made by China's President Xi Jinping. A young Xi made his first trip to Muscatine in 1985 as the leader of a Chinese group exploring Midwest agriculture technology. The small eastern Iowa town would never be the same, and neither would China's future leader. Anyway, they go on about this visit, and it's just more and more of what they can buy up and how they can get their tentacles deeper into our economy. And
right.
This is going on at a time when, you know, relations are getting more and more hostile all the time.
Yeah, and they're letting them put what you could call what the Idaho Commerce Secretary called a beachhead. You know, they're letting them get beachheads all over our country.
Yeah.
The first involvement that I saw, in as far as China is concerned, it was in Minnesota, and it was shocking what I saw there. And then they show up in Idaho, you know, which is why I was ready to jump on it when that 23-person delegation came. And apparently, what the Chinese do, they will make a donation to a charitable event or charitable thing, which in the case of Idaho was an EB-5 regional center. And what they get in exchange for that they're buying a citizenship, but they also get the right and they get facilitation for a renewable energy site, which means that they, they put out a field of what I call plastic crap out in the field, you know, these solar panels out in the field. But what they get for that is to be able to tap in to our electric transmission grid.
Yeah, so here we come back full circles to the smart meters and the smart meter hearings that we've been having, the fact that your data is being collected, and who is it going to be given to? The communist Chinese, for one, people.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that.
And if they're tapping into our electric grid, where's the data going to be going? You know, and this is part and parcel about what we're talking about, these corporations selling us out and the government working in tandem with them. Here we see from Ars Technica. Red flag Windows. Microsoft modifies Windows operating system for the Chinese government. They say China has long been both a huge lure and a thorn in the side for Microsoft. Massive piracy of Windows XP, a decade-long effort to replace Windows entirely with a homegrown Linux variant called Red Flag and an open office variant called Red Office. Red Office. Oh, that's a good one. Sorry, folks. And a ban on Windows 8 for government use following the leak by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden of information on NSA spying all have combined to hinder Microsoft in the Chinese market. But now Microsoft, in partnership with the state-owned China Electronics Technology Group, or CETC, is preparing to reboot its relationship with Beijing, thanks to a modified version of Windows produced specifically for China, Dow Jones Newswires reports. CETC, which develops technology for the Chinese government and military, owns a 51% stake in a joint venture with Microsoft called CNM Information Technology Company Limited. The new operating system created by the venture is in testing at three government pilot sites. There's the chairman of the CETC, his name is Zong Kung Lai, I guess, told Dow Jones Yuval Du and Yang Jai that the venture was beginning the sales process with the Chinese government. Windows 10 is already widely available to consumers in China, but Windows is still banned for government systems, and given the reach of the Chinese government into all things, that means Windows has been largely excluded from the enterprise market in China. The custom version developed under the joint venture is essentially a custom image of Windows 10 at its core, with a set of policy settings hard-coded for government users. It's not clear if additional code is being added to the image. Anyway, this thing is going to be tailor-made, I'm sure, to make sure that everything is censored properly. Now, for the people inside the government, I guess it's custom-made for them. But if it's being sold on the open market, I guess that obviously we've seen a pattern of U.S. corporations, including Google and other corporations operating over there, to censor the internet and do whatever the bidding the Chinese government wants to do. You know, we were told years ago, Vicky, that if we just engage China in capitalism, if we just did free trade with them and urge them to open up the market and see the benefits of a free market system, that, you know, communism would melt. And here we are today living with the reality that nothing could be further from the truth. I'll tell you what, we got the break. Let's take the break. We'll be back.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the third and final hour of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks, and it continues to be the 25th of March, 2017, as we move rapidly through the broadcast and through the hour. At the end of the last hour, I was commenting a little bit about the communist Chinese influence and how this is not being talked about. Vicki, you were about to say something before I had to rudely interrupt you with the break there. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, I do. It's about what they call state capitalism, which is what they say that China has, which is that the government owns a percentage of corporations that do business. They own a percentage of it. You know, so rather than taxing a corporation at 40%, the government just owns 40% of it. And they have, their communist Chinese party leader embedded right within the company. Well, what I found out, I've been redoing my history of the NAFTA superhighway. And I made a connection with what was going on over in Europe. And it turns out that over in Europe, they started state capitalism in trying to compete with the United States. And it began with the Airbus. The Airbus was a project of a consortium of countries and companies, you know, to compete with Boeing, Lockheed, and McDonnell Douglas in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that is classic state capitalism, you know, which is really not capitalism at all.
That's
would, fascism. I don't know if you would call it fascism. Yeah, corporate-led fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually had a system. It's been written about, and it's called co-opetition, which is an oxymoron. You can't have cooperation. Yeah, it's supposed to be
cooperation and competition.
And competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there's a show title.
Right.
Say that again. And co-opetition?
Co-opetition.
Co-opetition. Wow. I like that, though. I mean, you're right. It's not. It's totally contradictory, but it's a. It's interesting. It's one of those things that make you ponder.
Yeah, stop and say, wait a minute.
Well, they have silver-tongued devils thinking this stuff up all the time, don't they?
Oh, they do, yes. Oh, language is so important in this whole agenda that's going on. I can't even stress enough how important language is and words are and phrases are, because they redefine the common meanings of the word. It's like sustainable development. You know, when we say, as regular people, when we say sustainable development outside of the context of Agenda 21, we think that they just mean, you know, using resources efficiently or whatever. What's wrong with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that sustainable development is a label for a whole doctrine of how people should live on Earth, and, you know, the development of technologies for it and everything else. Well, anyway, so language is really, really important.
Yeah.
But over in Europe, this system of co-opetition, it's supposed to be cooperation, pre-product development. So basically, it's just cooperation in research. That will ultimately be used in the competitive arena for development of projects, which is really absurd. You know, if you're talking about developing technologies for smart highways and things, which is where what I was looking at when I found this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you do the research, you are doing the product development. Period. And so both in the United States and over in Europe, they have developed this behind the corporate front, this whole system of research that is, you know, through the universities, that is actually product development paid for by the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
They, under the guise of research, and that's how our economy is being run now. We do not have capitalism.
Right.
We have this system of state capitalism.
Yeah.
Because, of course, once the Europeans started doing this with the consortium that developed Airbus, and then they started on the Eureka projects and a project called Prometheus, which was the development of technologies for information systems embedded into the infrastructure, then of course the United States did it as well.
Yeah.
So that's what our real economy is. It's we don't have a real economy anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, if you want to call in, 1-844-646-8376 if you have anything to add, 844-6-GOVERN. Once again, toll-free, 844-646-8376. You know, I found it interesting that now the North Korea is being blamed for a major bank robbery at the New York Federal Reserve. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but this is something that was in the Economic Policy Journal. I found that kind of humorous.
I didn't see that at all. North Korea?
Yeah. Yeah. That fat little, butterball, as you called them last week. Federal prosecutors are building cases that would accuse North Korea of directing one of the biggest bank robberies of modern times. The electronic theft of $81 million from Bangladesh's account at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York last year, reports the Wall Street Journal. The charges, if filed, would target alleged Chinese middlemen who prosecutors believed helped North Korea orchestrate the theft, according to the paper. The efforts to build federal cases, people familiar with the process said, reflect the decision at the Justice Department that there is merit to the view of some private security researchers that the Fed heist was linked to the hacking in 2014 of Sony Pictures Entertainment, which the Federal Bureau of Investigation blamed on North Korea. This smells to me to high heavens. I don't know, you know, maybe it really was North Korea. But I find it interesting how, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank, all of a sudden all this money comes up missing, and, you know, well, let's look around for somebody to blame. Yeah, here's somebody
if
we can blame.
North Korea, if North Korea can hack the Fed,
yeah,
we might as well just give
hang it up.
It's all over.
Yeah, that's the thing. It smells like a story to me. It's my first thought is that they made off with the cash and they're just pinning it on him because he's an easy target. Yeah, North Korea.
It's ridiculous. And what you said there was that North Korea, with the help of the Chinese
middlemen. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's just, you know what? That sounds like a Hollywood grade B movie plot.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody will make that. Only it'll be a documentary in documentary form. From the Three Free Thought Project, we see after a U.S. refused to charge them for laundering terrorist money, mega banks busted again. An investigative reporting coalition recently released a report alleging a multi-billion dollar money laundering operation that has affected hundreds of banks and companies in 96 countries, including the repeat offender HSBC. And here you got it again. HSBC is up to their eyeballs in criminal activity. Everywhere you turn. You know, and this is the problem. None of these, there's never any consequences. And this is why this keeps continuing. In 2012, HSBC, one of the world's largest banks, settled with the U.S. government, avoiding criminal prosecution of its executives. And there's the problem. For helping to launder money for Mexican drug cartels, as well as Al-Qaeda. According to the U.S. Senate's report, which investigated the matter, HSBC provided a gateway for terrorists to gain access to U.S. dollars and the U.S. financial system. Loretta Lynch, while serving as the U.S. District Attorney in New York, said HSBC engaged in a sustained and systemic failure to guard against the corruption of our financial system by drug traffickers and other criminals and for evading U.S. sanctions law. As a result of the criminal charges for money laundering and admitted guilt in four counts against the global banking firm, the mega bank was let off with a slap on the wrist. Lynch stated, quote, HSBC has agreed to forfeit $1.256 billion, the largest forfeiture amount ever by a financial institution for compliance failure, unquote. Because they were let off with zero criminal charges, the bank was allowed to go back to crooked business as usual. The Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project published a comprehensive narrative that details how billions of dollars were moved from Russian sources to bogus shell companies before traveling further into various banks and ultimately numerous companies that inadvertently accepted corrupt funds.
Well, that's really kind of how the whole global economy works. I think that if they actually shut a bank down that did that, they would be shutting down virtually the global economy, because that is the way that it works. Foreign direct investment. I mean, where does this foreign direct investment money come from? I know that a lot of it came from drug money from South America. When I lived in New York, there was a lot of activity going on, new businesses going in. Mm-hmm. I mean, they built a restaurant, a new restaurant in Manhattan on the Upper East Side where I lived. that restaurant was just incredible. All this beautiful orange marble and, you know, out tables outside. I mean, it was just beautiful. But they had a cook who couldn't cook. I don't know where they got this guy, but, you know, he was kind of, the waiter was kind of like a mafiosa guy, you know?
Wow.
I mean, it was just so obvious that the money had came from bad sources, because no normal investor would invest so much money in the appearance of a restaurant and not even have a decent cook.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, here we see from Asia Times, Chinese banks and HSBC caught up in huge money laundering scam. They say several of China's state-owned controlled banks, as well as HSBC's Hong Kong branch, have allegedly processed hundreds of millions of U.S. dollars from vast money laundering operation run by Russian criminals with links to the Russian government and the spy agency FSB. So until there's some kind of hanging in public square for these people, I don't see any of this ever changing.
But there won't be. There won't
be.
You know
why?
No,
there won't be.
Because all of the governing officials at the global level, they're all in on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem.
It's a global conspiracy of corruption at the global level.
Yep. In the meantime,
I don't know what you do about that, you know?
Yeah, well, the people have to get outraged enough and do something about it. And unfortunately, the people are outraged, but they're outraged at the wrong thing. It's all political parties. It's all, you know, putting pink hats on your head and going into marches. And, you know, they don't really even know what they're protesting. It's slogans. It's everything that Jan Kozak mentioned in his treatise that he wrote on how they overthrew the government over there in Czechoslovakia. It's the same thing. All over again.
Is it the same strategy that I described that they called the Russian hybrid that isn't Russian?
Yeah, well, it's the same tactics. This pressure from below, pressure from above, you know, doing strikes, doing protests, popularizing slogans, you know, fists in the air, this sort of stuff.
Yeah, there's a good
gaining
quote.
Control of key institutions, you know.
A quote that I have here is something about, I don't know, it's not really a quote, but they're talking about blurring the lines between war and peace. Hmm. And it's war between the lines of war and peace.
Well, that sounds pretty Orwellian.
Yeah, and Art Sobrowski called it, Admiral Art Sobrowski, he's the one that defined this strategy in the United States. And he called it net-centric warfare, and it's a different kind of warfare, and it fits the description of what they're calling actually Russian hybrid warfare.
Hmm.
It's war in the context of everything else.
Interesting.
That's what Thomas Barnett called it.
Hmm. Well, it certainly is a war on our economy. And a war on the people subsequently. Sears is on the verge of collapse now. Kmart is going out. I know Radio Shack is going out. Payless prepares to file for bankruptcy. Economic collapse. Go ahead.
All of the brick-and-mortar stores are going out. And I don't think it's the internet as much as it is that people just don't have the money anymore.
Well, that's it. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because, anyway, more than 3,500 retail stores, Economic Collapse blog says, are going to close across America over the next few months as the worst retail downturn in U.S. history gets even deeper. Earlier this week, Sears shocked the world when it announced that there is substantial doubt that the company will be able to continue as a going concern much longer. In other words, Sears has announced that it is on the verge of imminent collapse. Meanwhile, Payless stunned the retail industry when it came out that they are preparing to file for bankruptcy. The retail apocalypse that I have been writing about, he says, is about, you know, it's greatly accelerating. And many believe that this is one of the early warning signs that the economic collapse that is already going on in other parts of the globe will reach the U.S. shores. Well, I think it's already here. I think it's been here. It's just being masked. It's been masked for a long time. You know, we're supposed to we're supposed to feel good that this stock market has been soaring. Of course, it has been going back down. I'm not sure what it did in the last couple of days here. But
you know
what?
I don't even look at the stock market
anymore.
Well,
I only bring that up because computer, the media talks about it like it's a
It's all computer manipulation. It's not real
trading.
Yeah,
the whole
thing
is bull crap. Yeah, we know that. But, I mean, we're supposed to feel good about it. Like, oh, looky there. See, Trump's in office. New guard in office. And now he's going to deregulate. And everything's going to be all good. And, you know, business is going to thrive. But, you know, the underlying, you know, the whole thing is being held up by, you know, paper. It's a house of cards. It's a house of cards.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they can't create a media image of a booming economy and make it real. It isn't. I mean, that a long time ago, around 2004, 2003, I was watching the layoffs, you know, and it was like 400,000 every quarter of people losing their jobs. And there were record bankruptcies, record foreclosures, record numbers of people losing their jobs. I mean, it was just like an economic holocaust. And I don't think we have ever recovered from that. I think the media has tried to create an image of a recovering economy, but I don't think it ever has. And I don't think it ever will, because the whole design of the global economy is concentration of wealth, concentration of power, and supply chains.
Yeah.
Which means that they have made the global corporations so efficient for, you know, their business model that there is no economic activity within the communities that is really necessary.
Well, you're forgetting one important component of the whole operation, and that's inclusive capitalism. You know, all the rich billionaires are getting together and figuring out how they can help us all out so we can feel good about
creating
that.
Nonprofits and things so that we cannibalize each other.
Well, to make sure that we're, you know, we've got the ability to contribute. We've got to be able to buy things to make them even richer than they already are. So, anyway, there's a new trade deal that people need to be aware of called JEFTA. Apparently, Glenn Moody writes, the election of Donald Trump has turned the world of U.S. trade deals upside down. The U.S. officially pulled out of TPP, although some still hope it might come back in some form. Well, I've said that from the very beginning. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, ladies and gentlemen, will be back. Don't think that because Donald Trump pulled us out of it, that some future president won't bring it back. It will be back, because they spent years working in secret hammering this thing out. And they spent God knows how many, probably billions of dollars in the process along the way. They've got too much wrapped up in this to let it go. So it will be back. I guarantee that. But they'll put it on the back burner. They'll keep it back there for a while. People will forget about it. And then when you least expect it.
They'll give it a new name.
Yeah, that's what I think will happen. Yeah, they'll rebrand it. You know, they'll rebrand it. It'll be called something else. But the vast majority of it, maybe all of it, every word, jot and tittle, will be the same Trans-Pacific Partnership that it was before. And then they'll have a new slick marketing wrapped around it. I mean, this is how they operate. They never give up. They never give up. So, they say TAFTA and TTIP seem to be on ice, but Trump's choice for U.S. trade representative has just said he is open to resuming negotiations, so it's not clear what might happen there or with the TISA. Against that confusing backdrop, the European Union has been quick to emphasize that it is in favor of trade deals and is keen to sign as many as possible, presumably hoping to fill the economic and political vacuum left by the United States. One of the negotiations that has been going on in the background is for a major trade agreement between the European Union and Japan. It began in March 2013 and has garnered little attention, as people have focused on the more imminent threats of TPP, TTIP, CETA, and TISA. That's just changed, thanks in part to a joint statement signed by dozens of civil societies in both the European Union and Japan. The EU and Japanese government have been negotiating a deep and comprehensive trade agreement which would cover a third of all the world's GDP. The 18th round of negotiations took place in Tokyo in December 2016, and whilst the negotiations might come to a close soon on the EU side, the mandate given to the negotiators is still not public, and on the Japanese side, secrecy is total. Neither most parliamentarians in the European Union, member states, and in Japan, nor European and Japanese civil society organizations and trade unions know that the content of the discussions, nor have they seen draft chapters or have been consulted. Does this all sound familiar? Anyway, they're condemning all of that. The other factor that has suddenly put the spotlight on JEFTA, the Japan-European Free Trade Agreement, is the first leak of some of the negotiating documents to the Austrian site Attic. Unfortunately, we don't have the actual pages yet. A summary originally was in German that broadly confirms the information contained in one of the few detailed documents in the European Union's official JEFTA site. 314-page trade sustainability impact assessment prepared for the European Commission in 2016 and largely overlooked. So, anyway, what are we to believe? What are we to make of this? The more they do these trade agreements, the more it makes it harder to compete without also going into these trade agreements. And I think that that's really the purpose of it all. You know, the WTO was created, and I know a lot of this is outside of the WTO, these unilateral or multilateral trade agreements. But I think the purpose of the original WTO and the Uruguay round and all of that was to create a club that everyone was forced to join, which would be a regional bloc that in order to compete, you had to join it. And without being a member of it, you have no place to sell your goods. You're offered, everybody within the bloc is a most favored nation. And if you're not in the bloc, you're not a most favored nation. And then, therefore, you have no place to sell your stuff. And so you're frozen out. So in order to have any kind of economy, you're forced into this globalist system. And that's the problem.
That has been their objective, is to build these global institutions, and the trade agreements aren't about economic trade. They are about creating international law and norms, and so they've been behind the illusion of trade agreements. They have been building the structure of an international governing system.
Yep.
And it is that international governing system that will collapse all of the nation states.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, moving along here, a little homeland security news. There's been a number, I think it's worth noting, a number of incidents lately at the White House. Now, I've been trying to... you know, we one thing, folks, you'll learn about us if you don't already know. We play no political favorites here. If somebody's doing the right thing, we'll say they're doing the right thing. If they're not doing the right thing, we're going to go after them. Okay? And so we've done a lot of criticizing of Donald Trump lately because some of the stuff we're seeing emerge is very concerning for our country and very damning for Trump. But I do want to talk when we come back from the break about a little bit about some of the security things that concern me that are going on. Let's go ahead and take the break. Final half hour straight ahead. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America, governamerica.com, and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And we'll be back in a few. Don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. We're in the home stretch of the broadcast. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks as we continue on here. GovernAmerica.com is the website, and 1-844-646-8376 is the toll-free number if you want to join the show. 1-844-646-8376. I mentioned earlier, before the break, we've had a number of security incidents at the White House. And my concern here is that I'm afraid one of these guys were up there for 16 or 17 minutes. He stayed on the grounds for a sustained period of time. Then there was another incident where a man pulled up and said he had a bomb in the trunk, and then he uttered the statement that this is a test. I don't know if you followed these stories, Vicki. This is something that it's almost like there's a shot across the bow going on here. I got a report. Let me play this and see what you think of this.
With those new concerns about White House security after a bomb threat over the weekend, our senior White House correspondent Cecilia Vega has new details. Good morning, Cecilia.
Hey, Michael. Good morning to you. President Trump is back home here at the White House after a weekend away at Mar-a-Lago with new questions after three White House scares in a little over a week. A man driving this car to a Secret Service checkpoint near the White House on Saturday, allegedly telling an officer there's a bomb in the trunk and saying this is a test as he was taken to the ground. Emergency vehicles swarming the street. No bomb was found. The suspect arrested. Earlier that day, another incident at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue after an intruder jumped over a bike rack barrier along the north fence of the White House. He didn't make it over. Sources tell ABC News he wanted to deliver a letter to someone in the administration.
You don't want them to think that they can go and deliver a letter to the president by jumping the fence. That's just not acceptable.
The president was inside the residence last week when Secret Service found an intruder on White House grounds. Authorities say Jonathan Tran jumped a fence at the Treasury Department, vaulted another fence around the White House, hiding behind a pillar on White House grounds before he was found and arrested at the South Portico. The Secret Service says Tran was on the grounds for 16 minutes.
I thought we had learned some lessons, but this is perhaps the worst one I've seen.
A letter from congressional investigators say Tran may have triggered alarms the Secret Service ignored, and that Tran not only moved around the White House grounds undetected, but may have also attempted to enter the building.
He got to the White House literally jiggling the door.
The series of incidents leading to questions about whether one of the most secure sites in the country is secure enough. A security redesign of the White House fence is in the works. One of the changes to come, raising the fence from 8 feet to more than 13 feet.
There's the 13. it's almost like this is a warning. You know,
it does seem like a kind of a shot across the bow. But that, you know what? They did the same thing with Obama. Remember when the
That's the point. You go along, or we can get you anytime we want. That's what seems to be the message.
Mm-hmm. So that does point to the intelligence agencies, I think, because they are the only ones that really have the technology and the access to be able to do that.
And the mind-controlled, you know, stooges to be able to send in there. You know, that's the thing. Why would he go undetected for such a... I mean, one of the most secure, arguably the most secure place in the country. And this guy's wandering around on the grounds for 16, 17 minutes? Very odd.
Yeah, it's almost like the security had been disabled.
Well, they even said that in that report, something about he he probably triggered alarms that they ignored. Well, why would you ignore alarms?
Well, or maybe they were turned off. Maybe the computer systems were hacked and were just shut off, rerouted with a virtual private network.
I don't know enough about their security systems really to comment on it, but I mean, I would imagine they have cameras everywhere.
There was a theory on 9/11 that's what happened between the FAA and the military unit that is supposed to monitor air traffic. Because what happened was that the FAA guy did call the military command center, and they set up their emergency communications line. And what theoretically happened after that was that a virtual private network was thrown over the top of that, and it basically rerouted the communications traffic between the two. So they thought they were communicating, but in fact they really weren't.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, up in Canada, we have the House of Commons passed an anti-Islamophobia motion, M103.
The hottest issue in the House of Commons this week was a motion introduced by a backbench Liberal MP. It's called M103, and it calls for the condemnation of Islamophobia. Instead of triggering a reasonable discussion, though, it's turned into a sometimes ugly and deeply divisive debate. Vashi Kapelos is following it. This isn't a bill, it's just a motion, Vashi. So how did it become such a polarizing issue?
Donna, the simple answer is politics. The motion is straightforward. It asks MPs to condemn Islamophobia and get a committee to study how to stop it. Conservatives worry the word Islamophobia is too all-encompassing and will infringe on the right to free speech of someone who wants to criticize the niqab, for example, or Sharia law.
The conservatives have said they are not supporting M103 as it stands. They have proposed amending it. Some suggest the word Islamophobia should be replaced with something else. Critics of the motion say it will limit free speech or, even worse, take Canada down the road to Sharia law.
Now, they're downplaying the impact of it because, oh, it's just a motion, it's not law. But that's obviously a sign of movement of public policy in a particular direction. So it is definitely a concern. In the meantime, we have Trump pressuring sanctuary cities that holds undocumented. Again, they're not undocumented immigrants. This is USA Today, you know, with this article. And I get so frustrated when they use that term, undocumented immigrants. You're not an immigrant if you sneak in the country illegally. You're an alien.
You're an alien invader.
Yeah, and we have judges in our country that are helping these people get away. Here's a good example of that.
A judge under investigation accused of an outrageous stunt to free an illegal criminal who was an immigrant. Investigators in Oregon say Judge Monica Haranz allowed Didier Salazar to sneak out of her county courtroom to avoid ICE agents who were waiting outside to pick him up. He was there on a drunk driving charge when somebody reportedly let him use the judge's private entrance to make a getaway. Salazar was eventually arrested. The judge still got the job, still on the bench.
Yeah, which begs the question, why?
Well, you know what? That goes to what I was talking about earlier. You know, if they have all this surveillance capability, how many of our judges and people in our criminal justice system have been caught in the snare of and are being blackmailed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's so many of them. And they, of course, would be a deliberate target.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you're trying to take over a country, of course the judicial system is one of your first primary targets.
Exactly.
But that they are so blatantly violating the law and engaging in criminal activity, you have to think that, you know, maybe they are being blackmailed and maybe they were ensnared by this surveillance state, the police state.
Well, they need to be prosecuted. They need to be prosecuted.
Well, Something that's really, really important and not really being talked about that much is that this systemic surveillance doesn't just stop at the international level with the intelligence communities. It goes right down to our local police departments. Mm-hmm. All of the emergency 911, the command and control systems, the surveillance systems, they are all part of the fusion centers. And so in a hearing that I watched last week, I forget which one it is. I'm going to have to think about this. But they said that any law enforcement officer doing an investigation, it was the driver's license images. The FBI has a database of everybody's driver's license image that has signed an agreement with the FBI, and when they do a search for, they can do image searches on people's faces. Even when they have not committed any crime, you are still in the FBI database.
Yeah, and that hearing, we'll have to dissect that hearing a little bit next week, hopefully. I unfortunately didn't have time to get into that one like I wish I had. But that's very important, the facial recognition thing, because you're right. I mean, they're using these things. Well, here you have the national ID card and the whole biometric identifiers. It really is a death of a thousand slices. But
we know that they are putting this surveillance technology everywhere. You know, the cameras at the intersections, and who knows where the cameras are. And if you... if you were setting up a strategy to occupy and defeat a country, that is, of course, what you would do. You would go after their politicians. You would go after their judiciary system and law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Because if you control those entities, then basically you control the country.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say regarding the illegal aliens, there is a U.S. code. In fact, I want to give a shout out and thanks to Frank Steffen for finding this. 8 U.S.C., section 1324, bringing in and harboring certain aliens. It says, any person who, knowing that a person is an alien, now think of that report we just played about the judge. Any person who, knowing that a person is an alien, brings to or attempts to bring to the United States in any manner whatsoever such a person at a place other than a designated port of entry or place other than a designated by the commissioner, regardless of whether such alien has received prior official authorization to come to, enter, or reside in the United States, and regardless of any future official action which may be taken with respect to such alien, knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that an alien has come to, entered, or remains in the United States in violation of law, transports or moves or attempts to transport or move such alien within the United States by means of transportation or otherwise, in furtherance of such violation of law, knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that an alien has come to, entered, or remains in the United States in violation of law, conceals, harbors, or shields from detection, or attempts to conceal, harbor, or shield from detection such alien in any place, including any building or any means of transportation, encourages or induces an alien to come to, enter, or reside in the United States, knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that such coming to, entry, or residence is or will be in violation of law, or engages in any conspiracy to commit any of the preceding acts, or aids and abets the commission of any of the preceding acts, shall be punished as provided in subparagraph B. Okay, now here's subparagraph B. A person who violates subparagraph A shall, for each alien in respect to whom such a violation occurs, in the case of violation of subparagraph A, it lists a bunch of the ones I won't give off, or in the case of violation of subparagraph and it gives another reference, in which the offense was done for the purpose of commercial advantage or private financial gain, be fined under Title 18, imprisoned not more than 10 years, or both. In the case of violation of, and it gives another reference, with which from which we just read, it be fined under Title 18, imprisoned not more than 5 years, or both. In the case of violation of, and another reference, during and in relation to which the person causes serious bodily injury, or places in jeopardy the life of any person, be fined under Title 18, imprisoned for not more than 20 years, or both. And in the case of violation of subparagraph, and it gives the reference again, resulting in the death of any person, be punished by death or imprisoned for any term of years or for life, fined under Title 18, or both. It is... Okay, so anyway, the law is very, very clear on sanctuary cities.
Did you watch that interview that Josh Tully did with the whistleblower in Missouri on the refugee resettlement?
I don't think so.
Okay, we'll have to have you watch that and talk about it next week. But... And there was another follow-up interview on the Hagman & Hagman program with Josh Tully. But sounds like that they could arrest the whole Lutheran services, charity services, because...
Well, that's just it. The law is not... This is why I say the law doesn't matter anymore. I mean, this is very clear. And these sanctuary cities, I mean, if we got a Justice Department, and this is why I got to wonder, is the Trump administration really serious about this? We've got a Justice Department now that could step in and start prosecuting some of these city leaders. Because they're harboring illegal aliens is a felony. And I just read you the punishments. Aren't these people being arrested?
And it's blatant, and it would be a slam dunk case because they're talking about it in public, not even hiding it.
Yeah, and we're resolved to maybe we can withhold federal funding. Well, that's a great move, except for one thing. That's a little too lenient. You need to go after these people personally. They're a danger to our country.
Isn't that the interesting thing about our country? Everything has become about money. If you have enough money, you can buy your way out of any trouble at all.
Yeah.
Because, you know, money buys your freedom. It doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah, and really, folks, here's what we're facing here. You know, we've got MS-13 gang members coming into the country now, you know, committing sexual acts, multiple stabbings. Here's a good example.
Police in New York saying the suspect in a series of brutal crimes is a gang member and illegal immigrant who's been deported 4 times. Tommy Vladim Alvarado Ventura is accused of stabbing 2 women and sexually assaulting a 2-year-old girl. Laura Engel is outside police headquarters with more on this. All right, Laura, shocking story.
It really is, Shannon. In fact, here at the Nassau County Police Headquarters, the police commissioner here has said it is the most heinous criminal act he has ever seen in his 28 years on the force. The suspect you described is a reported member of the notorious and violent Salvadorian gang MS-13, in addition to being here in the United States illegally. 31-year-old Tommy Vladim Alvarado Ventura was known to police for a series of crimes over the years, and investigators say he should have never been back in this country.
He was deported in 5 years, 4 times, and since 2011, he's wandered the streets of Nassau County, you know, free, and that is deeply disturbing. You have a little baby who, just talking about this makes me nauseous, a little baby who will never, ever recover from the injuries she's recovered at the hands of this monster.
National Border Council President Brandon Judd testified in a recent Senate hearing where he was asked about reports that a 14-year-old girl at Maryland Public Schools was raped by an illegal alien who was on their alien removal list.
Senator, had we have done our job, that 14-year-old girl would have never been raped. Period. That's all there is to it. Had we have held those individuals in custody, or that one individual in custody, pending a determination whether that person should be allowed to remain in this country, that rape wouldn't have happened. We failed the citizens of this great nation by not securing the border. Not only did we have the catch and release program that completely and totally demoralized the rank and file agents in the Border Patrol, but we also had an arrest rate of one out of every five individual that crossed the border illegally. We only arrested one out of every two. We only had a 50% effectiveness rate. That's a problem. So not only were the individuals that we were actually arresting, not only were we releasing those individuals, but we were only apprehending one out of every two that was crossing the border illegally. There's no private company in the United States that can operate and be successful if they have a 50% success rate.
No.
They would go out of business.
Yeah. So these are real dangers that are being posed upon us. And where is all this coming from? Melody Hallett sent me, and I think you too, Vicky, the United Nations document. This was dated, the letter was dated January 30th, 2017, from Peter Thompson to all permanent representatives and permanent observers to the United Nations, New York. It says, Excellency, I have been informed today that consensus has been reached on the draft resolution entitled Modalities for the Intergovernmental Negotiations of the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration, which was circulated to member states under silent procedure on January 26, 2017. The draft resolution, as attached, will be brought to the General Assembly for adoption once its program budget implications have been reviewed by the Secretary General, the Advisory Committee on Administrative and Budgetary Questions, and the Fifth Committee. I wish to thank all member states for their efforts and spirit of collaboration shown throughout consultations. In particular, I take this opportunity to express my gratitude to His Excellency, and they name off a bunch of people, blah, blah, blah. I trust this resolution will facilitate a timely and effective process leading to the adoption of the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration at an intergovernmental conference on international migration in 2018 to the benefit of all member states. And
We know that there are members in our State Department that are participating in that intergovernmental committee.
Absolutely.
And what you just read there would be sedition.
Yes. Absolutely.
Undermining our that's the thing.
It's a conspiracy to harbor illegal aliens, which is exactly where we were reading from the law a moment ago.
Well, it's more than that, actually. It's a conspiracy to undermine the laws of the United States.
Yes.
This whole intergovernmental
modalities for the intergovernmental negotiations of the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration. We'll put it in the show notes.
It's a hidden government. It is a secret government behind the scenes of which the American people are not aware.
Mm-hmm.
And it's treason.
Yeah.
Pure and simple, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Well, we have in the waning moments of the broadcast, at some point I want to get back into the World Economic Forum, but we just don't have time to do that today. I do have a couple more Homeland Security stories, however. There's some, and here again we come back to if this problem goes away, if this problem, continues, and something isn't done about it, how will the slippery slope continue to fall in the United States? Well, we look again at Sweden, where they apparently now, according to this guy, they now have legalized child marriage, rape, and incest to accommodate the refugees.
What has become of my country? The Swedish courts have just legalized child marriage and incest. Yes, you heard it correct. Child marriage and incest is now legal in Sweden. Let me give you the full story of what has happened in what could potentially become a precedent-setting case for the future. 21-year-old Emin from Syria married his 12-year-old cousin Aisha back in Syria before they moved to Sweden as refugees. After they came to Sweden, Aisha fell pregnant. In other words, she became pregnant while in Sweden. This means that the child rape has happened on Swedish soil. Aisha is now 14 and she is 7 months pregnant. The Swedish social services, for once, did something right and decided to separate this child from her so-called husband. Now, I will add that I don't have much left over for the Swedish social services. For example, they take kids from parents who are homeschooling, because homeschooling is illegal in Sweden. Anyway, they decided to separate the child from a so-called husband, which, of course, is the right thing to do. They set up a meeting with Emin and Aisha to inform them that the child marriage is illegal in Sweden and that they would separate them.
Okay, I don't have time to play that whole piece. The bottom line is a bunch of Islamists got together and did a protest. They got the whole thing overturned, and a court ruled in their favor. So now the precedent has been set. and there goes the law. The legal mechanism is coming down on the side of that culture. It's absolutely insane. And you don't think that'll happen here? I think it
already has happened here. I remember there was a case about a Korean guy. I think he was Korean. Anyway, he killed his wife. And the judge ruled that it was a cultural thing. He was excused because it was part of their culture.
Wouldn't it be gritty if we actually
to do that?
Yeah. Well.
And this was back in the 1990s, you know, before any of this was going on.
Yeah, it's just sick. It's just really sick. And this is why everybody needs to be concerned about it. And I guess the only thing you can do is contact your legislative leaders and get them to work.
Get them to do what, Darren?
Well, a lot of this stuff is happening on a local level, and without the cooperation of these people, it wouldn't happen at all. Anyway, we're over time. Unfortunately, we have to go. So I got to hit the button and say thank you, folks, for being with us. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. And my music is already fired, so I'll tell you what, I'll do this. God bless you, folks. Thanks, Vicki. And, folks, tell somebody about the show. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.